and welcome to I'm Trying to Think episode 38. I am Chuck Warner, and with me as always is my co-host Dave Stern. Say hello, Dave.
Hey, folks.
I'm Trying to Think is a podcast brought to you by the Foundation Institute. Find them online at foundation-institute.org. You can become a fan of I'm Trying to Think on Facebook. Just do it. I'm not going to give you instructions. Or you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/I'm Trying to Think. And you can email us at contact@I'm Trying to Think.com. And this is a very special episode of I'm Trying to Think. Dave, I'm teared up. You know, it's very emotional. Because I got soap in my eye.
I feel like is pain an emotion, or is it like shame because you put soap in your eye and that's dumb, or like what does that provoke emotionally?
It's a mix of emotions, man. I can't describe it to you, really. The song this week, opening song, is Espresso Love by Dire Straits.
It kind of has this quality where it's like it's like the riff from Layla, but inside out, kind of. No, that's what it sounds like to me.
I can see where you're getting at. Oh, Dave, today is August 14th. One of our friends is calling it St. Nemesis Day because it is 6 months from Valentine's Day. It's kind of the anti-Valentine's Day, if you will.
Right, right. Kind of the half-birthday, but with Valentine's Day instead of a birthday.
Yeah, I don't know if he was inspired by H.H. Monroe's short story, Feast of St. Nemesis, The Feast of Nemesis, in which he talks about a holiday that is for revenge, basically, for spite. Holiday for spite. Actually, I'll read I got a little passage from that. And then we're going to talk about... That leads us right into a topic, Dave.
Oh, good. I like having topics, because then we can, you know, the show can keep going.
Yes.
That's useful. We got a couple.
So...
I think we're good. We actually, this week, we have a mail bag that, is a bag filled with multiple pieces of mail.
Yeah, and
by multiple, in this case, I mean two, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that's too exciting, but we'll find out. So, this is from The Feast of Nemesis by Saki, a.k.a. H.H. Monroe. There is no outlet for demonstrating your feelings towards people whom you simply loathe. That is really the crying need of our modern civilization. Just think how jolly it would be if a recognized day were set apart for the paying off of old scores and grudges, a day when one could lay oneself out to be gracefully vindictive to a carefully treasured list of people who must not be let off. I remember when I was at a private school, we had one day, the last Monday of the term, I think it was, consecrated to the settlement of feuds and grudges. Of course, we did not appreciate it as much as it deserved, because, after all, any day of the term could be used for that purpose. Still, if one had chastised a smaller boy for being cheeky weeks before, one was always permitted on that day to recall the episode to his memory by chastising him again. That is what the French call reconstructing the crime. A passage from The Feast of Nemesis by Saki. That's what we're turning this show into now.
We're just going to read, of like sort of delightful, like cheeky, early, like late 19th, early 20th century English authors.
We're going to go from, post-Victorian to Edwardian. We're going to cover a nice swath of time there.
Okay, in that case, remind me next recording to bring in my book of Evelyn Waugh stories.
Oh,
I'm
great.
Excited. We're taking this in a good direction.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of listeners next week.
Yeah, I'm saying Evelyn Waugh wrote one of my favorite satirical novels that involves white slavery. One of my top two.
That's good. All right, Dave, so this is spinning off into the topic. Here we go. Ready?
Yeah, let's
revenge.
Do it.
Talk about it.
That all you got is in terms of segue? You just revenge, talk about it, and then we go?
Well, I mean... It doesn't need a segue. I just introduced it with a passage from a turn-of-the-century novelist.
Right. No, I'm not complaining so much about segue, so much as that was open-ended. That was just revenge. Talk. It's a little bit Larry King, but...
Yeah.
I feel like it assumes...
Also, we're going in the direction of Larry King, who himself is post-Victorian or Edwardian. I'm not 100% sure which, but he was born somewhere in that time. See, Larry King old jokes, Dave. That's what's going to take this show to the top.
Just straight up riding that train, the Larry King bullet
Larry
train to
King
success.
Old jokes, Lindsay Lohan like drunk jokes. What else you got? Short jokes about that guy who hosts American Idol.
Yeah, is he short?
Yeah, really short.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and jokes about Simon Cowell being mean.
I mean, so we're just
Randy, what's his face, saying
that.
Dog.
I mean, so we're just going straight for that least common denominator.
Least common denominator. That's why it's the least common denominator, Dave, because it's useful for adding fractions.
Isn't American Idol collapsing now anyways? Like, aren't they having judge problems
Lord,
or something?
I hope so. Lord, I hope so. Lord, I hope so.
Okay, so
I believe in a God who ends American Idol.
No, you
unfortunately,
don't.
I believe in a God who ends American Idol after one episode. So obviously,
he doesn't exist.
I have some.
Your beliefs seem to have been empirically falsified.
Yeah, I have some problems with him. Let's say that. So, anyways, revenge. Talk about it.
Well, I mean, what do we want to talk about it? It's a big topic.
It's a big topic.
Where do we want to drill in?
Start somewhere. Tell me how you feel about it. Let's make this the psychology hour with Chuck Werner. We'll just sit
okay,
you on the
tell
couch
me how
there.
You feel.
Just
how
you
do
lay
you feel?
Down on the couch right over there.
Uh huh.
All right. You you comfy?
I'm pretty good.
Okay. Good.
I'm hanging out. I'm chilling.
Tell me how you feel.
Yeah, I think revenge. I'm gonna say usually not worth it.
And how does that make you feel?
Oh, when you say psychologist, do you just mean that computer program that whenever you say anything, it says, "How does that make you feel?"
Tell me more about that, Dave.
Okay, that's a yes. Although I will say, if you're talking about revenge, one place where I... Because normally, in terms of being, like, you know, grandiose plans or, you know, your cask of Amontillado kind of deals...
Yeah, that's a big... I mean, that's a really
that's
long...
That's kind of canonical
that's
revenge.
That's a long con, yeah. If you will.
I think that's generally not worth it. But I've got to say, short-term revenge... That, to me, is another kettle of fish. Like, one thing I do a lot is... See, I'm generally not an aggressive driver.
Yeah.
But I will be a passive-aggressive driver.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you there.
Like, what I think I've talked about... I'm not sure if I've talked about this on the show before. I think I might have, but... If someone behind me...
Yeah.
...is just really mad, unjustifiably...
Yeah.
That I'm, you know, driving at traffic speeds or stopping at a red light or what have you.
How dare you stop at red lights?
Yeah, I think that's usually what's gotten it is that I didn't basically make a wild left turn onto a busy street to beat a red light.
Yeah.
That really puts a woman's day out.
You can imagine, Dave. She
sometimes,
had a lot of important things planned.
I mean, or a gentleman, in fairness, but I think the last time it happened. I'm just saying, the last two times it happened, it was a 50-50 split. It was a lady and then a gentleman. But the last time was a lady, so that's why I went with the lady pronoun.
Let's do our further digression here.
Sure.
Let's branch this
out. Spiral it down.
To another if statement. So, we have no homo, right? And we have no pomo. But what would you say after a sentence to indicate that you weren't being sexist? I mean, really, we could be, like... You could, like, say just something so that people knew that you weren't being sexist, racist, or any other sort of, like, you know, stereotyping bad person.
No, I don't know, like, I don't know, how do you abbreviate misogyny? I don't know, no miso, that's not catchy, that's not
miso?
Good. Yeah, no miso, I don't like it.
You don't like it?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of maybe a catch-all. No Limbaugh?
Really, I think the problem with the catch-all is it already exists, and it's no offense. That is the catch-all version of this. And actually, this is something I was thinking about recently.
Okay. You're a dude, I'm
further.
A dude. No,
yeah.
No.
Okay.
Let's not branch. Hold on, we're
okay,
finishing
we'll
this loop.
Stick with this. We're dudes. We're both white dudes.
Yeah.
Well,
if I
dudes.
Say something to you that could be construed as sexist, but I want you to know that I'm not being sexist, me saying no offense to you doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean?
Well, I still might take offense on principle, if not, you know, it's not an attack on me.
Then I would slap you like a bitch.
Hey.
No Limbaugh.
Hey. Okay, yeah, so I could see no Limbaugh working.
Yeah, I mean, it works for racism, sexism, making sense-ism.
But here's my problem with it, which gets to my same problem with, you know... No homo, no pomo even. Actually, no pomo doesn't quite have this problem.
Yeah.
You know, no homo, no offense. I think I thought about this, I don't know, a week or two ago when someone said, not to rain on your parade, but...
Yeah.
And what I realized is, here's, in my opinion, the acid test for just stupid, annoying rhetoric in that sense is, if you say something that's a negation, and the thing it's a negation of is something no one would ever say, it's a stupid it's a stupid thing. Like, no one ever says, you know, well, offense, fuck you, you know, that never happens, you know. No one says offense, you know. You don't see guys going around, you know, I'm gonna you know, have anal sex with you, homo. You know, that doesn't happen.
I actually have seen that happen, but that's
okay, different. Yeah, I've seen that happen, but only because I've done that.
Yeah, that's a long story.
The saying homo part, not the anal sex with a gentleman part, to clarify.
To clarify. But we don't judge. If you had anal sex with a gentleman, we wouldn't judge. The show doesn't judge. Okay, it judges a little, but...
Yeah, I'm going to say it judges
a lot. It doesn't judge on the basis of anal sex.
No, not at all.
We don't discriminate based on anal sex. Except maybe if you're having with an animal. But if the animal's consenting, I don't have a problem. I think animals can give meaningful consent. It's just hard, you know, hard to get it. Because they play hard to get. Teases. All right, Dave, you let me go a little too far here with the sex with animals.
I wanted no part of it, so I was just going to let you spin that yarn as long as you wanted to take it.
Right,
I was uninterested in following
you. So are you okay with no Limbaugh? Or,
I mean, it has the same problem, but on the other hand, it's a good catch-all.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think no pomo is good. I think no homo is fine if you're that homophobic of your own sexuality. I mean, if you're afraid of your own sexuality. Homophobia is a weird word because I think it goes in multiple ways. Like, there are guys who are afraid to have any qualities that might lead to an identification as a homosexual kind of homophobia. And then there's guys who beat gay men homophobia. And I think those are kind of different. I mean, it's possible for you to have both. They're intimately connected.
I'm going to say they are intimately connected.
I don't know if they're... See, this is the part of a standard interpretation of psychology that I don't necessarily agree with. And that is that a guy who beats up homosexuals is in some way repressing his own homosexual feelings or lashing out because of his own homosexual feelings.
Oh, not always. No, sometimes I think it's just sheer, you know,
like a tribal, other group kind of nonsense. I think it's 99% other. I think almost every problem that boils down to I hate a person I don't know is fear of other. I mean, that it just boils down to that very basic primal emotional drive or whatever you want to call that. But like, because for instance, I just see that a lot of the guys, let's say people, you know, men, maybe there are women, I don't know, who would go out and beat up a gay guy just because he's gay.
Yeah.
Not far off from the people who would go out and beat up a black guy just because he's black. So I don't think that they're afraid of their own blackness and covering up their own inner black feelings. They're just haters. I mean, not haters in the... They're hateful people full of hate.
Hateful.
Yes. They're hateful, not haters.
Haters kind of gives it... Well, actually, if they're being
haters
a black...
Haters are cute, so I mean...
Yeah, haters is a different thing.
Yeah, it's a different thing. But we won't get into that. So I think hate is just hate. Sometimes, well, not sometimes. I think most of the time, it's just hate. It's just hatred of the other. And while it almost always has to do with some sort of insecurity, I don't think that the insecurity necessarily directly relates to the thing being attacked.
Yeah, except politically, apparently.
Except politically? What do you mean?
No, I'm just saying that seems to... Politicians, it seems to run the opposite way.
Oh, in politicians, yes. Yeah. They seem to really have some sort of weird thing going with gayness.
Okay, so what this all has to do with passive-aggressive driving is as follows.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, just to
keep rolling this train on. Keep rolling this train.
Actually, to pop it back down for a second, I just want to say, I think last episode talked about our show being recursive.
Yes.
I just want to say, computer science data structure-wise,
yes.
I thought about this.
Yes.
What it's really a better example of, it's a stack.
Yeah, it's a stack.
Yeah, it's a stack, you know?
Well, I said first that, actually. Because remember, I compared it to Magic the Gathering.
Last in, first out. That's true.
Magic the Gathering is very stacky, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just keep on popping topics on, and then we pop them back off.
But, I mean, recursion is a similar example. Yeah, yeah, it's a similar example.
You can build a stack that way if you want.
Yes.
But anyhow, passive-aggressive driving is... So, when, basically, when someone gets pissed off behind me, and I'm lucky enough to be taking a turn, I take the universe's slowest turn.
Yeah, and...
It's just fun.
Yeah, I can admit to you that sometimes a little bit of on-the-road vengeance against a total stranger is fun. But, yeah, I do... I similarly think that long-term vengeance against somebody who has wronged you, that's plotted out and everything, or even just casual hatred of somebody who has wronged you, it's generally fruitless. It's not really getting you anywhere. I mean, I don't know, that's me.
I feel like, I guess, if you were able to pull off, you know, the full Amontillado,
yeah,
that's one thing, but that's not how real revenge mostly works. I mean, you know, revenge is kind of puffed up in, you know,
yeah,
culture, you know, yeah, popular or, you know,
yep,
Edgar Allan Poe literary, because it's operatic and interesting. But the problem is none of us... few of us generally get wronged in these sort of grand, exciting ways. And few actual acts of vengeance are grand and exciting. Because, you know, most people, you know, you or me in our lives are not going to, you know, have some sort of violent vengeance, you know.
Yeah.
We're not going to bring someone low in some really primally satisfying way. So, you know, why not just, you know... Not necessarily forget the whole thing if you shouldn't forget it.
Yeah.
But, you know, just go about your life, have a sandwich, you know?
Well, this leads
don't,
us
don't
to
deal
two,
with it.
This leads us to two sayings and to ultimately the place that I wanted to go with this. The first saying is that, the best revenge is to live well.
Yeah.
Which I think isn't necessarily true, because I don't really think the guy that wronged you necessarily cares that you're living well. But it's definitely the best revenge for you.
Yeah, it's the healthiest
revenge. Yeah, you don't want to spend the rest of your life working on it. But here's where I was ultimately going with all of this from when we started this Nemesis Day conversation thing. Revenge is a dish best served cold. Dave.
Yeah.
I do not use this phrase, and I will tell you why. And here's an admission I will rarely make. I have no idea what that means. No
I
idea,
can actually
Dave.
Explain it to you.
Explain away, because I do not I can't comprehend how the hell that possibly means anything significant. But go ahead.
Okay, basically, the theory behind it is that, because it's kind of going, you know, cold and hot-tempered kind of thing.
Okay.
Basically, what they're saying is, you know, the best revenge is, you know, for example, let's say you punch me in the face. You know,
right.
If I get, you know, hot about it, you know, I punch you back.
Okay.
You know, that's, you know, vengeance in a quick and immediate way.
So you're saying let it cool.
But what they're saying is it would be much more satisfying for me to, you know, just, okay, you punch me, I walk it off, I go away, then 20 years later, I bury you alive in a wine cellar. You know, I keep coming back to that because I...
Yeah, because that's a classic revenge
case. That's a classic revenge tale, yeah.
I don't think you're wrong to keep coming back to that.
So but, they're saying, you know, revenge is more satisfying when it's a sort of coldly planned and executed, which I may or may not agree, but I will
say that's kind of what I thought, but that still doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I mean, here's another question about the whole saying is, okay, revenge is a dish best served cold. All right. Like, is that like gazpacho is a dish that's best served cold? Or is it like, steak, you would like to have your steak warm, but if you serve it cold, then that's like, yeah, fuck you.
I think it's more.
Or do you think it has nothing to do with that?
I'm just
using my imagination a little
too
much.
It's more of a gazpacho thing. Like,
okay.
Of those two, you know, in the metaphor. It's like I was saying, you know, the best revenge is living well with a dish served cold. So, when you know, I was just saying, just go live your life, have a sandwich.
A cold sandwich, though?
Cold cuts.
So you're saying not like a hot roast beef sandwich or...
No.
Like au jus?
No, revenge is some cold cuts. Like you know, maybe a nice turkey.
But I like a grilled cheese sandwich, I gotta tell you that.
Oh, I'm not going against... I'm not saying that the hot sandwich is wrong, but it's not vengeful.
It's not vengeful.
A vengeful sandwich is, you know, best cold cuts.
revenge is a sandwich best served with mayonnaise, lettuce, and tomato.
Yeah, I'm fair with that.
All right. That sounds delicious to me, but also I think some people might accuse that of being white revenge. No Limbaugh. See, I don't know. No Limbaugh doesn't flow. That's all right. We can think about it while we take this delightful break, Dave. How would you like a break?
I'm for it. Let's do it.
You're for it? Well, then we will be right back with more I'm Trying to Think. You got the touch. You got the power. I'm Trying to Think episode 38, a very special episode of I'm Trying to Think, where my eye is gooey. But I actually did the first segment.
Your eye is always pretty gooey. I mean,
I did the first segment.
You're rocking there. The vitreous humors in there.
I did the first segment with my eyes closed mostly, because my left eye actually hurts so much. These are the sacrifices I make for the show, Dave.
No, then you're so good at podcasting, you can do it with your eyes closed.
I can do it with my eyes closed. As it turns out, not reading from a script mostly, so that, you know, that part doesn't hurt. And we just came out of The Touch by Stan Bush and Barrage, apparently. I don't know who Barrage is. I always thought it was just...
There's a couple things I wonder about that.
Go ahead. Wonder away.
Is that one of those things where it's like a band whose name has the guy's name and a backup? You know, is it like a Mike and the Mechanics situation?
Uh-huh.
Or is Stan Bush a guy and is Barrage a band? But neither of them had the power to record The Touch alone, so they had to join forces.
Well, here's the thing. It's also from the Transformers the Movie soundtrack. So, not the recent one, mind you, the old cartoon. In case you couldn't tell.
That sounded it's very 2000s. Barrage,
it's possible Barrage was one of the Transformers involved. That sounds like a Transformer name. It's like The Touch by Stan Bush, Barrage, and Devastator.
Although, on the other hand, one thing you got to remember about Transformers and robots...
Me, Grimlock, got the touch.
One thing you got to remember about Transformers, and I'm not an expert
Me, Grimlock, in Transformers. Got the power.
I'm not an expert in Transformers the way you are.
Yes.
But I understand they're very much in disguise. You know, they're keen on being disguised.
They're not very much in disguise. That is I'm going to say that's false advertising.
But here's my thought.
It's like robots who can turn into things, but don't really bother like using that to hide themselves outside of the first episode.
Okay, but anyhow, here's my thought, is Barrage is some 80s band, but
stealthily,
the Transformer involved is Stan Bush.
You got the touch!
I feel like there should have been one Transformer.
Can you tell I spent most of my youth making that noise with my mouth?
Yeah, you got good at it. But I think there should have been one Transformer who just had a name. Just a guy, like, you know, like
Bob, the Transformer.
Like Frank Jackson.
Frank Jackson. Optimus Prime. Prowl. Sideswipe. Sunstreaker. Ironhide. Joe Smith.
Exactly.
He's like, I'm really in disguise. I'm in disguise so much. I have a name.
He's gone deep
that
cover.
That is in disguise. Like, that's like robots in deep cover.
And he turns into an accountant.
You look the same. Shut up.
No, just a little tie pops out.
A little tie.
And arm turns into a briefcase.
Yeah, that's helpful. I mean, then you could keep all his papers on him.
Yeah.
Although, if a guy came down the street with a briefcase arm, you would
notice something.
Yeah, you'd be the deep cover would be spoiled at that point.
I don't know. Really, my assumption is if the guy walks down with a briefcase arm, I would just be like, I guess this is what the Bluetooth earpiece guys are doing now.
Yeah.
This is their new thing.
Oh, man. Do we both hate the Bluetooth earpiece people the same amount?
Yeah. A lot.
Let me tell you two things I hate. Okay. If you're in your car and you're on a Bluetooth headpiece, good for you, all right? That's my first point. Good for you. You're doing the right thing.
Well, but I would say right thing is strong, but you're doing the less wrong thing.
Let's say you're a guy with your kids in a Target. You do not need the Bluetooth headset there, buddy. The earpiece, not going to come in helpful. And I'll tell you why. Because every Target in the country is a fucking dead zone for every cell phone provider. Have you ever noticed that?
No, I've actually been fine on Verizon, man.
Oh, man. I got to tell you. I've never had a cell phone that worked well
in a Target. I go in one Target, but that may just be one of those things. Like how your house is, you know, a non-AT&T death zone.
Yeah, if you don't have AT&T, then don't try and get phone service in my home.
Really, if you're most people, don't try and get phone service in Chuck's home, because that would be weird.
But that's just because I slapped the Bluetooth earpiece right off your face. Anyways, I don't get the people who wear them when they're trying to talk to me, because that doesn't bode well. Because I'm like, are you talking to me? Because you've got an earpiece on, and there's only one reason to wear one of those, because you're talking to somebody on the phone while you're driving.
Wait, when you say talking, do you mean they're still wearing the earpiece?
Yeah.
But they're having a conversation
with, like, me. With or you, with anybody, like with their kids. That's what I'm talking about. Like, they wear it around like it's a fashion accessory.
I think the idea is, if you're Bluetooth earpiece guy, which I'm going to say is the wrong move, but if you're that guy,
yeah,
then if you're expecting a call and you want it on your Bluetooth earpiece, you got to be ready to, you got to be loaded for bear, man. You can't be like, oh, my phone is ringing, I'd better put my Bluetooth earpiece on. You're burning precious time. You're burning that time. You could be using that time to write a response to a third guy on your BlackBerry. But no, you're fumbling for an earpiece like a schmuck. You gotta have that already on.
Yeah, I don't think it actually works that way. I'll tell you, if we were in Star Trek...
If you're saying they don't actually have to, of course not. That's fucking stupid. But I'm saying that's mentally where they're at.
If we were in Star Trek and we had little chest communicators, that would be...
Well, what if we were in first Star Trek and we had basically clunky flip phones?
Then we wouldn't have Bluetooth headpieces for some reason. See, because in Star Trek world, which is a utopia... They outlawed Bluetooth headpiece or earpieces, so.
That's true. And then in the 23rd century, they're just like, everyone's using flip phones again. Really, yep. Angular thick flip phones.
Yeah, things just come around in circles. They weren't using those because they needed them to be that big.
No, it was retro.
Yeah, it was retro.
So basically, they're like guys who, they're like using giant cell phones today.
I'm going to tell you something that's true about the universe. The reason their little communicators were so big, probably, is because they had to propel the signal faster than the speed of light, or else it would take frickin' forever to communicate with a spaceship in space. Have you ever seen an episode of Star Trek where they were like, oh, hold on, this communication has a delay. There's like a 3-second delay till the people in the Enterprise hear us.
No, I admit they need some juice
because they're
for
obviously using faster than light communications. And that's why they had to be big. You got to go big to go faster than light. Everybody knows that, Dave. Come on.
I know.
Until later when they get them small and put them on their chest.
Well, you think in the 100 years between that, and man, we've gone deep nerd now, but now that I pointed that out, I can continue.
Uh-huh.
I just felt the need to comment on how deep we were diving. I'm like, do you think between that they had like a razor site? Like, how did it go from one to the other?
Just let me tell you something, and we're going to put this to rest because it's going to blow your mind. Ready?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I tap my chest piece, and I say, bridge to the captain. And the captain responds, go ahead, right? Okay?
Wait, you say bridge to the captain?
Yeah, you say bridge to the captain.
What happens if you tap it and say bridge to Terabithia?
Nothing. So you tap it, you say, this is the bridge to the captain.
Wait, hold on. What happens if you tap it and say bridge over
troubled
water?
You're ruining the whole episode, Dave. Just dragging me down.
Wait,
you tap
hold
it.
On. What happens if you tap no it more and say jokes. Moons over Miami?
I do like Moons over Miami, though. Okay, because that's delicious, I'm letting you off this time. So you tap your chest communicator, and you say bridge to the captain, right? Or you say Picard to Enterprise, right? Whatever. Let's say you say Picard to Enterprise, right?
Right, sure.
And they say, go ahead, captain, right? There's no delay, right?
Right.
It's just like, bam, bam. Okay? How does that work? On account of, I hit my communicator and said, Picard to the Enterprise. So you would think that at the very least, first the computer has to figure out that I want to communicate with the Enterprise. And it opens that communication channel. That's fine. Let's say that's nearly instantaneous.
I see where you're going with this.
But then it has to replay to them that I'm saying Picard to the Enterprise so they know who is talking to them, right? But there's no delay. So you just hear them right back. They're just like, go ahead, Captain. Not the time and delay that would be necessary for the communicator to say to them, hey, you know, beep, beep, and then say, like, Picard to Enterprise, and then they would say, go ahead, Captain. So it would be a delay between you saying Picard to Enterprise and then you hearing go ahead, Captain, equal to the length of Picard to Enterprise, right? At the very least, not even counting the time it takes them to reach up and hit their own button or whatever they have to do.
Okay, here's my theory, and it's been like years since I've actually seen an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, I think in terms of Star Trek, it's like, how much we've talked about Star Trek on this show,
yeah,
versus how much how long it's been since I've seen an episode of Star Trek.
Uh huh.
That it's out of whack.
Well, my solution is that you should watch more goddamn Star Trek because it's good.
But anyhow, my question is: are communicators like, is that first call actually a dial? Like, is it more like a phone thing, or is it more like, you know, a two-way, like a walkie-talkie or a radio kind of thing? And then the Picard to Enterprise is like, you know, is just protocol. Like, no, is it like a 10-4 little buddy?
It's a multi-communicator. You know? There's no way it's a two-way. He can do anything. He can be like, Picard to Worf, Picard to, you know, Geordi LaForge, Picard to Data, Picard to my mom who lives in France still. Or his brother. I don't remember if his mom was still alive, but his brother was. I can tell you that much. From my Star Trek knowledge. So anyways, I'm just saying it should be like Picard to Enterprise. Go ahead, Captain. That's all I'm saying. It shouldn't be Picard to Enterprise. Go ahead, Captain. No, that doesn't work.
You demand, there's no universe you demand that works a second pause?
Unless there's time travel built into the communicator. And that would blow
a lot
my
of
mind.
Things out of the way. Because
time travel in Star Trek is almost always... Okay, let me say, time travel in Star Trek is always kind of accidental. We will put the show Enterprise aside and put it in its own little box for the time being. We won't talk about it.
Will we label that box Ridiculous Theme Song?
We can label it Ridiculous Theme Song. We can also label it, like, ruins all of Star Trek because it just introduces this time-traveling thing that's really outlandishly crazy.
Can we label it Bacula?
Yes, we can label it Bacula. Are there any other tags that you'd like to put on? We can tag the shit out of this thing, man. It's the internet now.
Oh, man. No, now I'm just thinking, like, through Blackula movies and replacing them with Bacula.
Yeah.
I've gotten as far as Scream, Bacula, Scream.
Oh, I would just watch you know, Return to Castle Bacula or something like that.
I'd watch Scream, Bacula, Scream.
Yeah, you would.
That sounds like a good show.
You'd watch...
Bacula Dead and Loving It?
No, you wouldn't watch that.
Bacula 2000?
You would watch Bram Stoker's Bacula.
I would definitely watch Bram Stoker's Bacula.
So, if you put Bacula in the Dracula role, who do you, like, map out to the other... to the other roles, because obviously the guy who plays what's his name? I always forget his name.
I don't remember. I didn't really watch Quantum Leap.
Yeah, you know, he plays Al. He was in Battlestar Galactica. He was in. He's been in a lot of things, and his name is eluding me completely. So, and it doesn't matter because I don't care. He's a nobody. What's he going to do? Come after me because I forgot his name?
But he should be in our Dracula picture.
He's got to be in there, and he is so Von Helsing. But you know, Von Helsing is the enemy of Bacula in this case. So I don't know.
Like, you know what I'm thinking?
Yeah.
Maybe it should just be like that scene in Being John Malkovich.
No,
just all roles are Bacula.
I'll tell you why. Because I hate that freaking movie.
Okay, put that aside. Just the idea. All roles are Bacula. It's an all Bacula production.
So you're saying he's playing different roles?
Yeah.
Okay, well. Dean Stockwell is his name. Thank you, IMDb.
All right, then.
All right. So Dean Stockwell, I'm casting him as Van Helsing, right? Let's see. What else has Scott Bakula been in that we could take other people from? Let's see. We've got... he's in that movie... Or he's in that TV show, Men of a Certain Age, that I didn't watch. So that's not going to help.
Oh, right. With Ray Romano.
See, this is Ray Romano in
there. See, I'll be frank. The reason I went with an all Bakula cast is was so we'd be done with this.
So we'd be done with it.
Yeah.
No, I'm not ready to be done yet. Well, let's see. I bet there's some guest stars in Quantum Leap that you'd be surprised at. Do you ever watch like old shows from like the 90s and be like, oh my God, that guy was in blah. Like when you find out, when you go back and watch old shows, you find out that, the guy who played Locke in Lost is in everything.
Yep.
He was in every show.
He did get around.
Yeah. He was in, I'll tell you how much he gets around. Okay. He was in the X-Files twice. Twice.
Two different dudes. Was he an FBI dude both times? I feel like...
No, he was a local sheriff dude one time. And I think the other time he was an FBI dude.
Because I feel like he...
No, I'll tell you... Actually, I'm sorry. I think I misquoted myself. I think it was that he was in an episode as a dude, and then he was in the movie, the first movie, as a different dude.
Okay, wait. Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. Because I've got another thing to talk about that kind of actor, but first, hold on.
Okay.
You just said a phrase that I'm going to say back at you.
All right.
And you're going to realize that, one, it wasn't what you meant, and two, it doesn't make any sense.
Awesome.
And that phrase was...
Throw it back at me.
I just misquoted myself.
That is the awesomest sentence ever.
Because what you meant is...
I misspoke.
I did something wrong.
I said something incorrect.
But what you said... I misquoted myself.
Which is, you could do that.
You could certainly do that, but you did not.
Okay, I'm not seeing anybody who's that interesting.
Okay, and anyhow, so then anyway, spinning back to the whole...
That kind of acting.
Terry O'Quinn was in everything.
He's in X-Files, then he's in the X-Files movie, I'm pretty sure. Okay, he's in he's in Star Trek Next Generation. We talked about that. He's been in, I think, two Law and Orders. Like, he's been in Law & Order. And then in Criminal Intent, he played a gay dude.
You have to be in Law & Order to get your SAG card. That's the rules.
But he played a gay dude in the Law & Order. And then he's Locke on Lost, but that's like...
But he's an actor who's in that class where basically...
West Wing.
Once you're a guy where it's like...
NCIS.
You can play... Basically, Jack. Once they're just like, you're a guy who could be a cop or some guy in a suit... Then you will be a cop or some guy in a suit in Roswell. Everything in the world.
Millennium.
Oh, he was
and
like
a
main
role.
Yeah, he was like a main character in Millennium.
Yeah, he's like a main dude in Millennium. But yeah, I was right. He's in the X-Files TV series, and then he was in the X-Files movie as Lieutenant Brian Tillman. Huh, that's an odd name, but you know. He was in, let's see, you got your Diagnosis Murder. Right.
I'm glad you also immediately went to Diagnosis Murder.
Earth 2.
That's something that stands out in the list, isn't it?
And here's a winner, Matlock. He's in an episode of Matlock. And Next Generation, he's Admiral Eric Pressman of the Pegasus, you know?
I like how you said Admiral Eric Pressman as if someone was going to be like, yes, Pressman.
Pressman.
My favorite character in Star Trek.
Reaching back further, we got L.A. Law. He was in an episode of L.A. Law. Jake and the Fat Man. Moonlighting? Oh, man, now we're stretching back. Remington Steele? Oh, just big winners. The newer Twilight Zone. And then that's
Miami
about,
Vice?
That's about, oh, Miami Vice. Oh, yep, Miami Vice. There you go, Dave. Nice catch. So, he, you're right, though. Once they dress you up like a cop and you're like, oh, you look right, then you're in everything ever.
Yep.
Especially the X-Files. The X-Files has so many, so many weird cameos and stuff in it. Seth Green, I'm pretty sure, is in the X-Files twice, too. Two different roles. He was in a pretty early episode, and then an episode, in the fourth or fifth season.
That's always fun when someone is two characters in the same show.
That's always fun.
You get a kick out of that.
Good time. But, X-Files ties itself through Lieutenant Munch to Homicide, you know, and then that gets you into Hill Street Blues, or not Hill Street Blues, but Saint Elsewhere.
Yeah, I know every show on television is a dream in the head of Richard Belzer.
It's a dream in the head of... if that were true, I would watch a lot more television.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so anyways, there you go. That kind of actor. And,
Yeah, then there's one thing I want to flip out to.
Flip out, Dave. Flip out!
That's a phrase.
No, you said flip out. Okay. I want to see some flipping out.
Okay, I'll wig out a little bit. This may blow your mind.
Uh-oh.
You're talking about that communicator delay thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see a one-second delay or Star Trek doesn't work for you?
Yeah.
Here's what I want to see.
Yeah.
I want to see Captain Picard be French.
You want to see Jean-Luc Picard be French?
Because I'm just saying... I mean, I love Patrick Stewart's performance.
Yeah.
They should have either made him an English captain.
Right.
Or cast, like, Jean Reno.
Jean Reno.
and just had him constantly smoking cigarettes.
Or what's that other gentleman's name who was in City of Lost Children and pretty much every Jean-Pierre Junot movie? I'm forgetting his name. Oh, well.
But I'm just saying, if you want a French guy, have him just be a real French guy.
Yeah, I can understand that. And he was from France, and he went back to France. And I don't remember if the brother, because he had a brother, and
possibly a mother. We've established that.
I don't remember if his dad and mom are alive, but anyways, regardless of all that, I don't remember if they were like French-esque-ish, whatever.
I believe you didn't have to gild the lily on that word. French would have worked.
French-esque?
Frenchy.
Well, they were Frenchy, future French, so I mean, you know, globalization, world economy, socialism. They might not sound like the French anymore. But I can understand how you think maybe his name should have been like Captain Peter Chesterhouse or something. You know, yeah, I can understand that, and that'd be fine.
Captain Danforth Wellington.
Danforth Wellington. I mean, but on the other hand,
the third.
On the other hand,
the third.
Do you want like the Chekhov syndrome, like where you have this guy who sounds like? Well, like, the most stereotypical, like, Eastern European dude ever.
Yes.
You want him to inspect your nuclear vessels?
Yep. I think we should have had an outrageously French captain.
All right. And Dominique Pignon is the guy's name.
Okay, yeah, sure. Dominique Pignon. Dominique Pignon. I don't know. Have Dominique Pignon just smoking cigarettes. And
you might recognize him. I think he was in... Wasn't he in Amelie? Yeah, he was in Amelie.
Have a turtleneck under the captain jumper.
Alien Resurrection. And he was in City of Lost Children. And he was in Delicatessen. And he was in... Yeah. A lot of movies. But a lot of the other movies are French. And if I said them, you would be like, I don't know what the hell he's talking. Like, L'Acte Inconnu. Or...
I believe Lacte Inconnu, that's French for lactose intolerant, right?
La Loi de Murphy. I believe that's Murphy's Law. I don't want to speak out of turn.
I think you've cracked the code on that one.
But La Loi de Murphy, I think that might be Murphy's Law.
Speaking of everything that can go wrong going wrong, do you think we want to hit the mailbag?
Ma Petite Mimi. That's another movie he was in.
Ooh, I can translate that one. I believe that is My Little Mimi.
I think you're right. All right. So you want to go to the mailbag. Mailbag! All right, I hit the button. Okay. So first you want to go to Dated Pipe?
Yeah, let's start with Dated Pipe.
Dated Pipe. So this is Dated Pipe. It's from the listener, John. And John writes, were you thinking of this villain in a suit? And he links to the Beetle. Perhaps you need a comics consultant such as a Mega B or myself. Mega B being our friend Jamil, who's very good with comics references.
Indeed.
I don't, because I have the internet. I don't need any of you. If I had Googled it, I would have found it out quickly. But sometimes I like stammering and trying to come up with bullshit before I Google, because I think that makes the show more honest.
Really, we're just not into facts here.
We are not into facts.
We're into truths.
Truths are greater than facts. And this is I'm trying to think, not I'm trying to tell you facts.
a different show.
If it was I'm Trying to Tell You Facts, we could just do things like, we could say, okay, carbon, you know, the its atomic number is 6, the molecular weight, or the standard atomic weight is 12.0107 grams per mole.
It's a solid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, electron configuration is 1s2, 2s2, 2p2. I mean, we can, you know, we could go on, but this isn't I'm Trying to Tell You Facts, it's I'm Trying to Think. So, here's more from John. John writes, to the rest of my missive, I believe that the listener mail segment of the podcast should be returned to the original, perhaps unofficial and hilarious, Punch You in the Mailbag title. I kind of remember us saying that.
Yeah, that's plausible. Because what that reminds me of is, I have, and we definitely have that in terms of recurring bits or jokes on this show, is it's sort of the way that I operate sometimes in my daily life, where I have this problem where I'll say a lot of things, and I may or may not mean those things, and I certainly don't remember the things I say.
Oh, God, no.
So what happens to me is someone will tell me, you know, often a friend or a loved one will remind me of a thing I said a few months ago. You know, someone who's the type of person who remembers things.
Yes.
And I have to do, like, sort of CSI forensics on my own, like, on myself.
And you know what's funny is that you've talked about this on the show.
I've talked about this. I think I may have talked about it in one of the episodes we recorded before releasing episodes.
I don't remember. I don't remember what was in those episodes. So, I mean, honestly, the title of the show could be I Don't Remember.
I Don't Remember. I think we talked about this, but in unreleased episodes. So I'm saying, you know, I have to just do these forensic constructions on my own. Which is like,
does that sound like something?
That sounds like the sort of thing I'd say.
Yeah.
But not. I was like, so yeah, I'll buy that.
And that happens.
That's plausible.
That happens with the podcast all the time. Because people be like, oh, I was behind. I listened to the episode, you know, 30. And oh, it was really funny when you guys said blah. And I'd be like, that is really funny. I think that I remember us saying that. It turns out I'm a funny guy if I just forget what I said and listen to it again months and months later.
Amuse ourselves goldfish style.
Oh, God. It's hilarious. If I go back and listen to the early episodes, I'm like, wow, we are really funny, entertaining, and insightful. If I listen to what we just did last week, I'm like, we are the lamest guys on the planet.
So is it just is it just the eternal sunshine of the spotless mind thing,
or
are we just getting worse?
That's how,
that's my question for you.
No, it's completely different than either of those. It's artistic integrity, man. That's what it feels like, is that you hate your work, and then much, much later, you're like, oh, okay, it wasn't that bad.
I guess that's better than the opposite, maybe?
Yeah, it's better than the opposite. That's, you don't want to live with that, because that's like when you're developing your skills, you know? And then you go back. Like, if I go back and read the stuff that I wrote in high school, I'm like,
oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
My God. All right. And John has one more paragraph, so let's get to it. He says, I will also take this opportunity to mention that my favorite episode of ITTT, which it's not ITTT, it's IT2T, is the shorthand for our show.
Is it?
Yeah.
I actually was going with the I-trip-T's.
No, I'm going ITT2T.
I know, IT2T.
We could vote. We could have a vote.
I know, my problem, because I can tell you
right
now.
Democracy rules.
I'm sticking with the I-trip-T's, and I'll tell you why. Because IT2T sounds like it should be like a boy band from 1998.
And that's why I like it. Because in many ways, we are a boy band from 1998. Do you forget so quickly that we sang our own theme song a couple weeks ago?
I do, yeah. Now that you mention it.
Yeah. Anyways. Episode 2, Untitled, which perhaps could be named Lord Gaga for its rotful content. See, it's, and again, John, not to correct you too much on your internet acronyms, but it's R-O-F-L, not R-O-T-F-L,
but
even though there's a the.
He respects the definite article.
I do not. We have rules in this language, and one of them is that you usually ignore definite articles in acronyms. Of course, acronym rules are all out the window because people just make up whatever they want.
Yeah.
I don't like that. But
there's no consistency.
Are you ready for listener mail number 2?
I am.
The long hello. Yes, it was nice. From Greg. Listener Greg, who's written us before. And this is just a bunch of silly stuff. But we like listener mail, so we're going to go over. We're going to roll through it. So he's given us some over-under numbers, because we were talking about that in the last episode. About over-under.
We were talking to sports talk.
And, yeah, sports talk. Sports talk with David Chuck. Yeah. I love that voice. You don't do it as well.
No,
it's got to be really smooth coming out. You can't rough it. You gotta go smooth. Like,
hold on.
Yeah, sports talk.
I've done it before. I actually did a radio show once. I did that for an entire hour. Yeah.
It was hard. My throat hurt at the end. All right, sports talk. All right. Over under on Ocho Cinco plus T.O. total fines in 2010. He's saying $74,000. That's pretty hefty. I'm going to go under. If I'm correct, most of the fines are 10 or 5.
Yeah, I think they're usually 5 or 10s.
I don't think they'll hand out more than 5 apiece.
Yeah, I think they're slipping under.
Go up to 10, but I'm going to go under.
I think they're slipping the under.
All right. And Greg, just in case you're wondering who's going to keep track of this, it's you. So at the end of the season, we expect a full report, because I'm not going and running the numbers and looking up TO articles. All right. Week in which Carson Palmer goes off on TO and vice versa. Week 4, he says. Over or under, Dave?
I take the over.
I'm going to take the over, too.
And also, I don't think it's going to happen the same week, because I think Palmer keeps his mouth shut for at least a week.
A week, maybe two.
Yeah. Week or two and after T.O. goes off.
I'm going to go over. I'm going to guess it's going to be like 6 or 7, because in order for one of them to go off and the other, they have to lose a couple games, and that might take a couple weeks. Okay. Week in which Ocho Cinco declares that everything is copacetic between Palmer and T.O. Week 5. He's going, yeah, it's a little joke. That's a little joke. So, week in which Ocho Cinco goes off on T.O. Week 7.
I'm going to take the doesn't happen.
You're going to take doesn't happen. Ocho Cinco goes off. See, it depends on what you mean by goes off. I think there will be a confrontation of some sort, but I think Ocho Cinco will play it like a joke, because that's what he does. And T.O. will play it like a joke, but the kind of joke where he's going to hit you in the face after, because that's what he does.
Or the kind of thing where someone's saying, like, ha, ha,
ha, ha, ha, ha, yeah, ha, laugh it up, because, that kind of thing. So, I don't know that's going to happen, but the week in which Ocho Cinco, makes a joke at T.O.'s expense, like, week 5.
Oh, I take that under. I take the under on that.
You take under 5.
He's a kidder.
Yeah, he is a kidder. Week in which the Bengals finally fire Marvin Lewis, 11. Now, it'll be, 17, 18.
Yeah, I think, it seems like a horse they're not inclined to stop riding.
No, they love that horse. Maybe till the end of the season, and then the whole team might fall apart. But we'll see. Bengals wins at week 11. 3. Over. They're going to win more games. They're just...
Who else is in the... I mean, they're still a decent team.
Yeah,
they won
the conference last year.
Who else is in the Central? North? What division? There's no Central anymore, right? It's the North now?
Yeah, it's North.
It's the Ravens are probably better. The Steelers are probably better when Roethlisberger's back.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Do they catch the Bengals when Roethlisberger's out?
And, Browns probably aren't going to be...
The Browns are still going to be a joke.
Yeah, the Browns are still going to be the Browns.
What have they done that's not a joke? But nothing.
All right. Week in which the disembodied soul of Paul Brown slaps the ever-living shit out of his son and team president Mike Brown, 13. I don't know. I don't believe in the supernatural, so.
I don't believe in the supernatural, but in some sense, I'm going to take the under.
All right.
I don't know why, but I'm feeling the under.
He has another, Greg says, other bold NFL prediction, John Fox fired in Carolina, Bill Cowher takes over. Might happen, probably won't happen till the end of the season. Bill Cowher's wife just died recently. I can't see him taking a coaching job this season. Not only is his emotional state probably not prepared for that, but even if he's the most callous motherfucker on the planet, you don't want to look bad coming like, oh, wife died of cancer. Think I'll take that coaching job now.
Well,
so,
you've got to admit, on the other hand, I'm going to play devil's advocate.
You're going to say, I know what you're going to say, Dave. You're going to say, getting back, just trying to get back to my life.
No. Here's what I'm going to say. And here's what I think, if he just came out in a press conference and went this way.
Uh-huh.
I think I would kind of be on board for it. Is Cowher comes out, he holds a press conference, he just says, he's got his chin, his jut mightily jutting
yes.
feet in front of his face.
Uh-huh.
Knocks over one of the microphones, but he gets it straightened out.
Right.
Then just says, you know, as you might guess, I have a lot of free time recently. So I've decided to return to coaching.
You think that's what's going to happen?
Yeah. I suddenly have a lot of free time.
I see. Is he going to say it is what it is? It is what it is?
No, that's not...
See...
He's not an is-what-it-is coach.
That's, he is an is-it-is-what-it-is coach.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. He definitely is. Like, he... Like, you know, Mike Tomlin is more an it-is-what-it-is coach. Like, he won't say shit if he has a mouthful, but Carroll was not that far off from that. But anyways. Neither of them are, if you want to crown the motherfuckers, then crown them types. So,
right. Right. You know.
That's the kind of coach I like. I like that. If you want to crown the motherfuckers, crown them.
Oh, man, then you got to get thee to YouTube after we're done with this and look up some of the Rex Ryan stuff from the first episode of Hard Knocks. I'm just going to tell you heard, that yeah, right now.
I've heard that that's some crazy shit. Yeah. All right, well, anyways, that's all of listener mail. Oh, there was one more thing.
Yep.
Episode in which Dave finally admits his massive man crush on Noam Chomsky, 45. See, I'm not going to go high or low because you control that.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we can't bet on because, you know, that's Pete Rose shit, you know?
Yeah, that's Pete Rose.
You know, I can't bet on that.
Yeah.
And two, I'm just going to say, I'm not sure because I think Greg's emailed about this before. I think I've mentioned Noam Chomsky once on this show, tops. I don't know much about linguistics. I don't know that much about his political stuff.
You don't know much about the...
I mean,
Manufacturer of Consent?
A little bit, but...
It's on Netflix, I think, so...
I'm not actually that interested in semiotics.
Or maybe it's on...
You know, in linguistics.
His linguistic stuff, he doesn't even talk about that anymore, I don't think. But if you... I mean, catch yourself some... Manufacturer of Consent. It's a fun watch.
I'm just really not sure where Greg picked this up from.
I don't know either, but he has strong feelings about it, to say the least.
I just think he's somewhere. He's writing fan fiction. I don't want to read it.
I'm trying to think fan fiction. Not only do I not want to know about that, but I do not want it. I don't want it to exist. And luckily, I mean, people would have to listen before they could write fan fiction.
So we're
safe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
keeping it low.
So that was listener mail. So, that's pretty much it, Dave. I think we can wrap up episode 38 here.
Yeah, I think we got it.
A night or a day.
Put a bow on that shit because we've wrapped it up.
And then we will serve it cold.
Mm-hmm. It's best served that way.
I'm trying to think as a podcast, best served cold.
I think we're good.
All right.
Yeah, I think we should have closed it on that.
You think I should have just went out of that? No, and I like to say goodbye and then treat you to say goodbye. It's like kind of how we do it now.
It's friendly.
Yeah, I mean it's a nice friendly gesture. It makes people feel like we're in the room with them, like we care about them, like we talk to them like they're old people. Like, hey, thanks for coming by. It was good to see you. I hope you have a good week. We'll see you next time we come by. Okay. Say bye, Dave.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye-bye.
God, why do we always have to come to the listener's house? It feels weird and it smells funny.
It does smell weird here. I don't know what that is, but I don't think I want to know.
It's just sour balls. But then
she like I mean, the, guy. Isn't that what mothballs are for? That's what I want. I mean,
it's like the official candy of death.
Yeah, sour balls. I thought they were supposed to, you know. All I know is that the orderlies told me they were going to start using stronger air freshener. It's just not. I don't know what's.
Well, they did. I think that's part of the problem. The place just reeks of High John the Conqueror.
Man, I don't know what they're thinking about that. But, I mean, we can just keep hoping that. Just slips away, I mean, peacefully, Dave. I'm not being cruel.
I think our listeners have had a good life, a rich, full life.
Dave had a good run, and it's just a shame to see them like this now. And I just, I mean, I know it sounds cool, but I just really hope they would. I just want them to slip gently, you know, into the night. Just kind of fall asleep and.
Say, if I told her that I felt this way.